revisiting the end of Silver State Helicopters. I'm Paul Plagg, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. In the Aero briefing today, we told you about a class action suit being filed against KeyBank by former students of Silver State Helicopters, which closed suddenly in February, leaving over 2,000 students who paid in advance without training and owing as much as $85,000 in student loans. KeyBank wrote some of those student loans, which under federal law cannot be discharged in bankruptcy court. The lawsuit will seek to prove not only that KeyBank was a knowing participant in a fraudulent financial scheme, but that the bank has a history of this sort of thing. I thought today would be a good time to revisit a discussion that ANN Editor-in-Chief Jim Campbell had in February with Ed Booth and Don Majewski, board-certified aviation law attorneys with the firm Zisser, Robeson, Brown, Nolis, and Majewski, PA. These guys were already investigating Silver State Helicopters on another case when the bankruptcy was suddenly announced. This conversation was originally presented over 2 days. It's been edited here to fit in a single-day format.
Ed Booth and with me, my partner Don Majewski. We are both board-certified aviation lawyers, which means the Florida Bar recognizes us as specialists in this particular area. Since March of 2007, we have been investigating Silver State Helicopters as a result of a fatal accident that occurred in Ponte Vedra Beach, Florida.
Well, that accident, as published in ANN and is monitored since the crash itself, and we got calls on that one, I think, within an hour after impact that something was amiss. But basically, they had an R-44 that went down with a student and an instructor. After a number of maintenance procedures were conducted, a short maintenance test flight was conducted, and as the NTSB found out to its horror, at least according to some of the folks on the investigation side of the coin, this helicopter was not airworthy. It wasn't remotely airworthy. This accident should never have happened. If you would, gentlemen, talk a little bit about what you found out as you investigated this accident.
Jim, I'm going to let Don speak to that. Don is an experienced helicopter pilot and can explain better than I can the control systems involved in this particular accident.
Jim, the accident, as you pointed out, was preventable and the necessary. But this one's particularly egregious because the components that control certain of the dynamic rotor system parts, the swash plate, the control tubes, and so forth and so on, were simply not secured properly and torqued properly. And the moment that happened, we were looking at a recipe for disaster. This aircraft was uncontrollable, much like a car being driven down a road. Having to negotiate a turn would be uncontrollable if the steering mechanism was not properly rigged and secured. So what we had here is a young lady who was a very safe helicopter pilot working as an instructor, providing instruction to his students, who basically had no control of the aircraft at the point in time when the control tubes came free from the swash plate assembly. It's a tragedy. It should not have happened. And it's all a function of systemic problems with the maintenance at Silver States.
And Jim, I would point out that Tamara Williams, the instructor, didn't have a chance to inspect this work because the bolt assembly is concealed behind an aerodynamic fairing that would never be removed as part of pre-flight action. So she did everything possible in terms of her pre-flight action, was a safe pilot, had around 450 hours of helicopter time as an instructor, and this was just a most unfortunate accident and 100% preventable, should not have happened.
The big question now is, in light of the Chapter 7 filing and the justifiable claims that the family of the deceased has at this stage of the game, what happens? What happens to them?
Well, the bankruptcy filing, Jim, is equally puzzling. They claim to have only $50,000 of assets available and liabilities of around $50 million. In light of the sums of money that each student candidate paid, which it's our understanding was around $75,000 to $80,000 per student, I think the first task is going to be to thoroughly explore the validity of those assertions that Silver State has only $50,000 in assets.
The other thing, Jim, that's interesting that Ed and I discussed earlier today is this. There's strong evidence that Tamara Williams was not covered by workers' comp insurance as required by Silver States. But even if she was, the conduct in this case is so egregious, we believe it would fall outside of any workers' comp protection. So, in that regard, even though Ed Booth and I believe there may be a stay issued, we believe that the stay will not apply to any claim as to the insurance proceeds for Silver State, and we're going to continue in that vein and not give up until we get to the bottom of this.
Let's segue from here for a second, gentlemen, and address the larger picture. Silver State Helicopters is a company that was built upon a dream, or the selling of a dream. But the promise did not meet the reality, did it?
No, it certainly didn't, but I don't think we really have to go that far with our analysis, Jim, because they simply didn't have the capability of training the students that they took on. And I think your investigation and our investigation as well has revealed that, for example, the Jacksonville operation, some 80 students with only two helicopters and four or five instructors, you simply cannot perform the training promised with that little of an infrastructure. And in our investigation has revealed nowhere near the level of maintenance personnel to properly maintain these helicopters.
Absolutely not. And you know, that's pretty much borne through in not just this NTSB investigation, but if you look at the dozens of accidents that have shadowed Silver State Helicopter, inexperience on the part of the instructors, inadequate supervision of students, maintenance issues, so forth, have shadowed this company all along.
I mean, there's even an accident, Jim, where one of their experienced instructors was killed picking up a helicopter from the Robinson factory and under some severe time pressures attempting to return it to Las Vegas. That occurred about 2 years ago. So there is a disturbing history of accidents for this company. But our investigation, Jim, is really centered on why Tamara Williams and Wyatt Duncan were killed. And again, we keep coming back to inadequate maintenance, inadequate oversight of that maintenance. And as the NTSB has pointed out, just plain not following the recommended procedures.
So this was a company that wasn't prepared to do a darn thing that they either promised specifically or implicitly as a function of being in the business they were in, correct?
That's true, and this may be the time to talk about how the students funded their flight lessons, because that is going to become a central part of the postmortem on this company.
Well, here's a real tragedy, because there are students that we've documented as of today that have literally only, in one case, spent his money and only gotten, you know, a little bit of data on what he's going to go through, and some of his books and so forth hadn't even started flying. And as I understand, they're on the hook for the whole price.
Oh, I understand. I think I put you in touch with a student here in town who paid $55,000 for 15 hours of flight training. But the mechanism for funding for these students were federally backed, federally guaranteed student loans, the same type of student loan you would obtain to go to a major state university. And for reasons that I really don't understand, the lending institutions were able to write loans for this helicopter training as if it was a legitimate student loan. In any event, these students were loaning or obtaining loans for anywhere from $55,000 to $85,000, very often at an interest rate of between 14 and 16%.
Oh, man.
Which, if you break that down into the repayment terms, is around $1,600 a month for 20 years to pay the loan off. Now, Silver State promised that there were adequate jobs out there paying huge sums of money that would allow you to pay that back in no time, but we sadly know that that wasn't true.
We'll be back with more in a moment. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Shoot happens. Come on, you know it does. Even the world's top test pilots know there are in-flight situations you can't always recover from. Mid-air collision, control failure, pilot incapacitation. In severe emergencies, do what the world's top test pilots do. Use a parachute. Except, instead of having to bail out of a moving aircraft, you can have the safety of a BRS full airframe recovery parachute. BRS has parachutes for an enormous variety of aircraft, from experimental to light sport, and all the way to retrofits on certified airplanes. Shoot happens. Will you be ready when it does? Call BRS today at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plagg. Today, we're hearing a conversation between ANN Editor-in-Chief Jim Campbell and aviation law attorneys Ed Booth and Don Majewski regarding the sudden closing of Silver State Helicopters and the effects on students who'd been told there would be jobs waiting for graduates.
Well, the one thing I can tell you in no uncertain terms, and just to throw my bona fides out there, I'm a commercial helicopter pilot. I'm also a CFI helicopter and have been for quite a long time. This whole industry, I've been watching it for years. I've been flying helicopters now for decades, and this whole, you know, jobs around every corner, man, it's not there. It's just not there. We're near Jacksonville, Florida. This is where, of course, Ed, your practice is located, and there was a facility there up at off of Craig Field, as I recall, and they had how many students in line there at this time?
We understand there were around 68 students enrolled in one form or another at the Silver State Craig Airport location.
Ed, there can't be six real helicopter jobs in northern Florida open right now for anybody even approaching coming out of a school with maybe a ink-wet CFI ticket. It's absolutely ludicrous to think anything else.
And they're competing against some very experienced and seasoned military pilots coming back from places like Iraq and Afghanistan.
Especially in a military town like Jacksonville.
Exactly.
And Jim, as someone who's had the pride and pleasure of attending helicopter training school with the United States Army, I can tell you that when Ed and I get calls from these people, we're immediately shaking our heads, wondering why anyone like Silver States would plant these visions of sugar plums in these kids' heads, telling them they're going to get jobs. I remember when I got off active duty, I was approached by several people to be a commercial helicopter pilot because I had tons of hours. And as you and Ed and I know, it takes time in any profession to get to a level of competence where you are sought within your area of expertise. And there's no way, shape, or form that these kids are ever going to get the proper training. Ed's got a gentleman that called him recently who's a retiree from the military who said, geez, this sounds like a great second career. I've got a retirement with the Navy. I'm going to become a helicopter pilot. And he's now calling Ed, seeing if Ed can represent him because they basically took his money and didn't give him any training.
And here's one other very difficult part for me to stomach. As I understand it, these kids, or in some cases not kids, people looking for a second career, are not only stuck, they're really stuck. These are obligations that cannot be discharged through personal bankruptcy.
That's the ultimate irony of this, Jim, that Silver State is able to go into federal district court in Nevada and file for Chapter 7 bankruptcy, discharge their debts, liquidate their limited assets, yet the students who bought into this dream do not have the same privilege.
Isn't there some responsibility on the part of these federal lending programs, the institutions that are part of those programs, that they're lending money in good faith against processes and programs that have legitimate aims, legitimate goals, and legitimate programs by which to pursue them? Isn't there some kind of responsibility on their part to just rather than say, hey, if you're stupid enough to go for this, you can get stuck with it?
Oh, I think there is. Unfortunately, they didn't exercise that responsibility until, to use Silver State's own press release, until last October. It appears that one of the straws that caused this house of cards to come crashing down was the refusal of these lending agencies to write any more student loans, effective last October or November.
Imagine for a moment that you're one of these students. What do you do now?
The first thing to do is to seek someone out who can assist in answering the questions about liability for payment of the loan when there is no training being tied to future payments. That's very troubling. As you know, a school loan, a true school loan, is not made if the student is not in school, and that's what we have here. So, traditionally, the lending agency should forego any further payment or obligation on the part of the person who took the loan. However, and I'm going to let Ed pipe in here, because of the nature of this agreement, it's not dischargeable, and it's, you can't escape from it. Ed?
Oh, exactly, Don. These students are in a real predicament. As far as what they should do, Jim, I think they should complain loudly and often to any government agency that will listen to them. This would include perhaps calling the local police on the non-emergency number and asking to file a police report for fraud, theft, whatever comes to mind. Contact the state attorney general, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, any state agency that will listen to them would be a productive use of these students' resources. They might want to consult with a qualified bankruptcy attorney to see what their legal options are. They want to stay in touch with each other so that resources discovered by one student can be made available to the other. I know they formed some informal networks over the Internet, and I hope they will continue to do that, but I think the more noise they make to government agencies that are in a position to do something, the better.
Doesn't this suggest that something needs to change in the system overall?
Well, my recommendation has always been, Jim, to pay for flight training as you go. Take a lesson, write a check. Take your next lesson, write another check. The flight schools will typically offer you a discount, sometimes as much as 20%, if you buy a package, a private pilot package, an instrument rating package. I have spoken to too many people during my legal career who have received letters from bankruptcy courts halfway through their training saying that, in effect, their money is lost. So the number one rule, in my opinion, is that pay for your flight training as you go.
And, Jim, I'd just like to pipe in. Ed and I are both very pro-military. I couldn't afford this when I wanted to be a pilot. Ed was in a little bit better position. He was an attorney. He was making very good money. He had a good career, so he had available cash flow to pay for flight lessons. I didn't. And some of us poor kids who come from blue-collar families knew that the military was the only way we were going to get flight training. And fortunately, we got the best training in the world. Now, we had to pay back the military with years of service, which was actually a delight. But I'm seeing a lot of people nowadays going towards the military because they know they're going to get the training if they're qualified and if they stick with the program and don't wash out. And they know that the only thing they've got to do is give back time. And the great thing about that is while serving their country, they're building hours and experience, and so they are marketable when they get out. But, Jim, you recall in post-Vietnam, when we got out of the Vietnam conflict, helicopter pilots were a dime a dozen because of the glut of warrant officer pilots that were extremely well qualified coming out of the service and basically not being able to find a job.
Yeah, that was a horrific set of circumstances at the time, and I don't know that this isn't kind of an artificially induced scenario in which the same thing has happened. We've got a glut of people out there and not enough jobs, and once again, going back to the claims made by Silver State, the jobs were never there that they claimed were there to begin with.
They also claimed, I believe, Jim, that they had a larger training operation for helicopters than the U.S. Army.
Oh, boy, yeah.
That was part of their marketing that we reviewed.
I have to tell you, I think this is going to have an absolutely chilling effect on the entire flight training community. I think we have just begun to see the fallout of things that are going to require significant changes and change the landscape of how career-oriented pilot training is conducted from here on out.
Yeah, I agree, Jim, and I would encourage the students and their parents, because their parents are part of this process, to ask a lot of questions, to visit the facilities, to take a look at the equipment that their sons and daughters are going to be training in, and ask questions about maintenance and who does it and how often. Because one of the additional tragedies of the Silver State bankruptcy is many of these students were required to have their parents co-sign on these loans. So the parents of these students are also obligated and cannot discharge the obligation in bankruptcy either.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time. I wish it was under better circumstances, and somewhere down the line we got to find something pleasant to talk about.
Okay, Jim. Talk to you soon.
The fallout from the Silver State Helicopters case will be with us for years. If you want to contact Ed Booth or Don Majewski, find contact info at www.zisser.net. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.